Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That war rocket Ajax to bring back his body.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims, and with me as always is Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you on this lovely evening?
I am doing very well, Chris, and I hope you are also doing well on this very special week.
It is a special week.
Talk about that shortly. Once we talk about our special guest, Jeremy Whitley, who is going to speak with us about Princeless and how it is in development as a film at Sony, which is very exciting news. We're going to talk about the just finished Unstoppable Wasp series, and working at Blockbuster is going to be discussed for quite a while.
There's literally something for everyone.
That's right.
In this interview,
lots of fun stuff is going to be discussed with Jeremy. But we've got some business to deal with before we talk to Jeremy, Chris. And that business begins with the honor and privilege of thanking our newest supporters on Patreon.
That's right, Matt. These are the people who have gone to patreon.com/warrocketajax, and they have kicked in as little as a dollar a month to help us keep the lights on and pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills.
And the people who have done that recently include Frederick Caraholt.
Well, thank you, Frederick.
Matthew McGrath. That's my name.
That's your name. Thank you, Matthew.
Steve Lee.
Thank you, Steve.
And Michael Rivera.
Thank you, Michael.
Those are the people who have most recently gone over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and kicked in, as Chris said, as little as $1 to help us out, to help keep the show going, to help make sure that Every Story Ever specials happen every month, to make sure that we keep doing snack situation specials.
And to literally make sure that we can afford the snacks that we need for a snack situation. Because let me tell you, we bought a lot of sodas that went straight down the drain for the last episode of that bad boy.
After about three sips, yeah. You ensure that all that stuff happens while you get some cool stuff, including ad-free episodes of the show. At certain levels, you get bonus audio. At a level above that, you get line-stepping privileges for all our list features and other cool stuff, like t-shirts. So if any of that stuff sounds cool to you, head on over to patreon.com, kick in a few bucks, help us out, help us keep the show going, get some stuff in return, and everybody gets a little something. We're all winners. We're all winners. Now that we've done that, let's do some checks and recs.
I think that's a good idea, Matt. So come on and diggity-tack
yourself before you wreck yourself. Chris, between us recording this and when it went up, you had a special day.
Yeah, that's right. It's my birthday. Saturday was slash will be my birthday through the miracle of recording, which is like time travel. It has not happened to me yet, but I am anticipating a very happy birthday. I got some tickets to a baseball game. And other than that, I think my plan is to sit around all day, not work, and maybe play a video game, because that's the thing I haven't done in a while.
That sounds like an absolutely beautiful, perfect way to spend a birthday. Now, Chris, my gift has been delivered, but I don't know if you've picked it up yet.
Oh, has? Okay, here's the thing. I was fully expecting that you would follow my lead and not give me my gift until a month after my birthday, like I didn't give you yours.
That is not how I roll, typically.
Nope. See, Matt, you're what's called a good friend. And I'm okay.
Debatable whether or not I'm a good friend. There are certain things I try to stay on top of, and that's one of those things is birthdays. Chris, you also have your wish list that people, listeners, can go check out if they want to.
That's right. There's a link to it on my website, the-isb.com. But don't feel obligated. Or do feel obligated. I don't know what makes you happy. Do what the spirit moves you to do, I guess is what I'm saying.
You do you.
But yeah, I am very excited about my upcoming birthday. I hear that someone in this apartment might make a cookie cake for me.
What's a homemade that? Cookie cake?
Yeah, Matt, a skillet cookie cake in a skillet that's in my kitchen right now.
Dope. That's just dope.
It is dope. It's extremely dope, and I'm super excited about it. But I have something else to talk about, Matt. Okay. I have a different check. This is not my rec, but it straddles the line, I think. The reason it's my check is because it is a thing I have been doing to the exclusion of everything else this week. And that is that in the past 4 days, I've watched about 40 hours of Game of Thrones. Have you heard of this thing?
I have a passing familiarity with it, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I had never watched it. Aiden decided that she kind of wanted to rewatch it since it's, you know, out there in the zeitgeist. And we got that 2-week free trial of the HBO stuff that's on Amazon Prime streaming. So I was like, well, if we're going to get through 6 seasons of this, we got to hustle. And so we have been working Game of Thrones like a job, like a full-time 40-hour-a-week job, Matt. And I am surprisingly enjoying it. I did not think I would, but I am actually really liking it.
Here's my question.
Yes.
What made you think you would not enjoy it?
It's, I don't know, it's like one of those things that everybody always talks about, and it's like, I mean, for one thing, you know me. I don't like dramas for adults. I could not make it through the first season of Breaking Bad. It stressed me out too much. And I had actually heard, people were telling me, like, hey, if you've got an anxiety problem, maybe Game of Thrones is not the show that you want to be getting into right now.
I feel like Breaking Bad plays your anxiety so much harder than Game of Thrones does.
Has been my experience, yes.
Game of Thrones just zigs when you expect it to zag sometimes.
You're saying Game of Thrones isn't 20 Serpentine, Matt? Is that what you're saying?
Uh-huh. Yeah. But it, otherwise, it's like very much like a straight-up sword and sorcery adventure thing. Just with more,
yeah,
like, shocks and more HBO sex and violence.
This is a thing. I said this on the last episode of Xena Business that we recorded, which I don't think is out yet. The gap between Xena and Game of Thrones exists, but it is not as big as people would have you believe.
It's true.
Just one of those shows has a lot of naked people in it, and that's the main thing. That's the main difference. I have managed to get through, like, with very few spoilers. Like, an interesting thing about me is that, like, when I decide I don't care about something, I go all in with not caring about it.
Sure.
So when that switch inevitably flips, I get to experience it all anew. So I'm pretty excited. So by the time you hear this, I should maybe be caught up, but still, please do not spoil anything for me.
Okay. Well, just get ready for how everything changes in season 5 when the character, the Wizard King, shows up. Really changes the tone.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like it. Look, Matt, you're joking, I assume?
I'm attributing that joke right now to my friend Sean Bogus, who thinks it's the funniest thing on earth that Game of Thrones might have a character called the Wizard King, who talks like this. I'm the Wizard King. And I think it would make the show 20 times better.
Let's talk about this for a second. And spoilers, I guess, for Game of Thrones, a show that I'm literally the last person on earth to watch. The first season of that show, like, is all like, oh, there's political intrigue, you know, like, we need to find the king's bastard sons, and who's going to take over when the king dies, and the kingdom's in debt, and can this honorable man deal with all these cutthroats in this Game of Thrones. The second season is like, hey, there's an army of zombies led by the Lich King on the way, somebody should probably deal with that. Yeah. Also, this lady with the eyebrows is going to go through a straight up Dungeons and Dragons adventure.
You're not wrong. You are not wrong.
Yeah, I kind of love that about it. It's like, it's kind of trashy in a way that I really appreciate.
It's certainly not highbrow the way people think of it at times as highbrow.
No, most certainly not.
Yeah.
But it is a show that takes itself very seriously, but is very also aware that it's, like, goofy and playing with, like, goofy shit like dragons and magic. And I love that about it, because that's the thing I love about superhero comics. That they take these very ridiculous things very seriously. I think it's a hoot. I really like Tyrion. Tyrion's fun. Peter Dinklage is A+. Good job being like the second highest paid person in Hollywood, I guess, because he gets like $1.2 million an episode. So good on you, my guy. But yeah, Game of Thrones. Do watch it, I guess, if you haven't. It's fun. Matt, what is your check this week?
My check is, I guess, a little self-promotional. And we never do that on this show.
I have forbidden it since day one, I believe.
It's in the bylaws. But
yeah.
I want to mention that despite my intense, overwhelming, almost all-consuming hatred of Facebook, I just can't stand it. I have gone months and months at a time, at a stretch, not going on Facebook. After carefully considering how I can up my profile as an author and writer of my own comics and sort of get myself out there a little bit, I broke down this week and started a Facebook author page. And I even decided to drop a little money on promoting a post from that page about Supreme Villainy. The book that I wrote that came out back in June. Listen, I still hate Facebook. I really, really wish it wasn't a thing that I had to use. But I'm coming around to the fact that if I'm going to be any kind of figure out in the world at all. And look, if you like the Warrock and Ajax Facebook page, you know it hasn't been updated since like 2014.
Dude, I legitimately didn't know we had one.
We have one. I'm in charge of it.
That didn't just become like Yuja's personal page?
I haven't touched it. I used to like update it with episodes, like here's the new episode. And I just stopped because I hate Facebook so much. But
it's a hell site for trash, so yes.
Maybe I'll get back around to updating the Warrock and Ajax Facebook page too. Would you like there to be a Warrock and Ajax Facebook page, listeners? Let me know. That's active.
Oh, you're asking listeners because my answer is no.
Well, yeah, my answer is also no. But if people want it to be active, I am occasionally on Facebook now because I'm working on that author page. I guess I could go on the Warrock and Ajax page and throw a link to the newest episode on there too. It's not what I want to do, but I would like for the author page to be like a cool thing if it's going to be active. So if you're listening to this and you like my stuff and want to go like it, it's just the Matt D. Wilson on Facebook, and you can let me know what you want to see there or what you would be interested in hearing about or knowing about or asking questions there or whatever you want to do. Just because, you know, I'm trying to make it a thing. I'm trying to get over my unwillingness sometimes to make myself known in the world. So I'm out there on Facebook, and it's not exactly what I want, but I'm doing it. That's a check. Chris, let's make some recommendations. What do you have to recommend?
I recommend that you never do that again.
What are you talking about, this voice?
Oh no, Meatwad, you've gone through puberty.
Yeah, it's me, Teenage Meatwad.
I love that song. But I'm just a Teenage Meatwad.
Yeah, it's very good.
My recommendation this week, Matt, is going to be a movie I literally was watching 10 minutes before we started recording. And that is the Lego Batman movie. Believe it or not, I had not seen it until tonight.
And you were cramming. You were cramming before the show.
I was like, it's 7:30, we gotta start this movie. I gotta be through this before Ajax, because I'm not gonna want to stop watching it. That movie's great. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it. It's one that I'm planning to pick up at the Redbox.
Hey man, public library. I'm telling you. That's the way to go.
But I very much enjoyed the Lego movie. And so I suspect that this would be one that I would like too.
Yeah, I recently saw the Lego movie. I can't remember if I talked about it on the show or not, but I think the Lego Batman movie is better than that first Lego movie. And I'll tell you why, Matt. Spoilers for the Lego Batman movie. It is a Batman movie focused entirely on the idea of Batman and the Joker having a semi-romantic relationship. That's point A.
Okay.
Point B, it's a Batman movie that has Orca the Whale Woman in it. And Larry Hama and Scott McDaniel get a special thanks in the credits, alongside Jerry Robinson and Carmine Infantino. The big threat is that Batman has to fight Voldemort, Jaws, the shark from Jaws, the Gremlins from the movie Gremlins, and the Daleks from Doctor Who. I was watching the movie, and I turned to Aiden. Like, there's a part, and like, they're talking about going and fighting the Gremlins, and they're flying at Sauron, and King Kong is there. And I turned to Aiden, and I was like, it is crazy that this movie exists. It is crazy that this movie got made. It is fantastic, Matt. It is delightful.
It's very weird that in the world of Lego is the only, and I assume it's not the case in the Lego Batman movie, but the world of Lego is the only place where Marvel and DC characters can cross over anymore.
Yeah, there's no Marvel characters in the Lego Batman movie. They do talk about Iron Man, and like Batman's password for getting in the Batcave is Iron Man sucks. And also, a thing that I think is very, very funny, they very clearly couldn't get Godzilla, so there's just another giant lizard that doesn't have a name in the movie. The other thing about it is, it also has an amazing cast. Do you know Zach Galifianakis was the Joker in that movie, Matt?
No, I did not know that, and that's sort of oddly inspired casting.
Yeah, Zach Galifianakis is the Joker, Jenny Slate is Harley Quinn, Doug Benson is Bane, Billy Dee Williams, obviously, Two-Face, and Clayface is Kate Micucci, Poison Ivy is Ricky Lindholm, the non-Kate Micucci lady from Garfunkel and Oates. It's wild! Jemaine Clement plays Sauron in this Batman movie, Matt! It's so weird, but it's super good, super fun. I really, really enjoyed it. So, unsurprisingly, I think it might legitimately be, like, the second best Batman movie after 66. Worth the trip to the Red Box. Matt, what is your recommendation this week for our listeners?
So, people are probably aware at this point that the CISO online comedy network is being sunset. It is going off down that old dusty trail. And
see you at the crossroads.
See you at the CISO.
Let me get a take two on that. CISO at the crossroads. There. You won't be lonely.
We finally got there.
We got there.
That's a bummer. There's a lot of neat stuff on CISO that I was eventually going to watch whenever I finally made the decision to subscribe to CISO, but that never happened, and now it's going away. So I'm not going to, you know, have that opportunity necessarily to see, like, bajillion-dollar properties or Take My Wife, which both look like really fun shows. As part of that whole process of CISO going away, several of the shows have been sold off to a streaming service called VRV, which I had never heard of until I heard that these shows had been sold off to it. Even though,
same, and I'm glad it's not just me.
There are some things there, but they kind of seem like, I don't know, just like web series, not online TV, like a lot of things. Even though I guess like Bravest Warriors is on there, which was kind of an online TV thing. I think that was cast off from Cartoon Network's old streaming service, though. They have a small collection of movies that you can watch and that kind of thing. But they ended up buying up four of the shows from CISO. And those four shows are Harmon Quest, The Cyanide and Happiness Show, Hidden America with Jonah Ray, and My Brother and Me with the McElroy brothers. And one thing that was very encouraging to know from that whole thing is that those episodes, the first season of My Brother and Me, not behind a paywall anymore. You can just watch those.
Yeah, because it's VRV has ads, so you don't have to pay that $4 a month.
Now, apparently, if they do a new season, there's going to be a new season of Harmon Quest, and it's going to be behind a paywall at least for a little while. But the first seasons that have all gone up are not behind a paywall. You just watch them with ads. So I have watched every bit from the episodes themselves to the outtakes, the bonus stuff from My Brother and Me, the first season. And I had seen the one episode that was up on YouTube for free, but boy, am I pleased that I have watched all the episodes now, because otherwise I would never want to see that one where they try to relate to teens.
The teens episode is legitimately amazing television for every reason.
It's my favorite of the bunch, I'm pretty sure. I like the one where they try to get Griffin's old job back also.
That one's very good.
The one where he got the job that he got fired from when he was younger. They try to get it back, but the one where they relate to teens is just beautiful stuff front to back. So if you were like me and you did not subscribe to CISO, even though there was stuff on there that you wanted to watch, you can at the very least watch My Brother and Me on VRV, which is also not at VRV.com, it's at VRV.co, which is double super weird.
That is, are you sure that the Mabim Bam show was not bought by Russian malware?
I mean, look, it's possible, but you can watch it for free at VRV now. I'll probably end up checking out some of the other shows, probably Harmon Quest, probably Hidden America with Jonah Ray, because those look like a fun time too. Definitely go watch My Brother and Me if you haven't watched it yet, because it is a fun time. And I hope they get to do another season, because I don't know how possible that is now that CISO's kind of out the door. It's not around anymore. All right, Chris, those are our checks and recs. Let's talk about some comics.
Let's do it.
Chris, I tweeted this, and then I deleted the tweet because I'm a dummy, and I got the title of the comic wrong, because I said it was Miracle Man instead of Mr. Miracle, which is the actual title of the comic, because, I don't know, I guess I'm old now. But
Matt.
Yeah, I know. Look, I know. And I know better.
The thing is, I know you know better. And I know that the disappointment that I am feeling in you is dwarfed by the disappointment you are feeling in yourself.
It was hours later when I realized what I had done. And
oh, Jesus.
I think I was just in one of those brain fogs. Anyway, Mr. Miracle number one. What I tweeted that I ended up deleting was, I have recently written some scripts for a comic series that will be coming out soon. That's about some heavy stuff that I think about a lot. And even from that point of view, Mr. Miracle number one is about some heavy stuff. And I totally buy into and agree with the near universal praise that this book has been getting by Tom King and Mitch Jurrets. But it is also a difficult comic book.
Yes. I love that this comic is gridded. It's reminiscent. It's drawing a lot of comparisons to Vision. But it's really reminiscent of Omega Men.
Yeah.
In terms of the way it's written and the way it's structured. And there's, all those Darkseid is pages are very good.
Those instances of Darkseid is, I took in a way that I have never taken Darkseid is before.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you haven't read Mr. Miracle number one, I would invite you to, with a warning, that it is heavily about suicide depression and probably a form of post-traumatic stress. In some ways, it felt super really relevant to me. Something that I have said recently is that what I have found the battle of my 30s to be is the constant fight against nihilism, the constant yes. fight against feeling like nothing matters or feeling like I'm engaged in futility. And that is so much the theme of this comic book. And so those dark side is don't feel like they're about a character named Darkseid necessarily, even though they are, because Darkseid is discussed, and we're talking about a war that's taking place between Apocalypse and New Genesis by the end of this issue. They also feel like these thoughts that Mr. Miracle is having about nothing mattering, about sort of this inevitability of darkness. Again, it's difficult. It's heavy. And that makes it both exceptionally good, hard to read.
The brilliance of the fourth world, right? Like the brilliance of everything that happens in the entire fourth world saga is that it's very plain what's happening. It's told as this cosmic space opera, but it's not difficult to figure out. Like, I've talked about how Kirby's brilliance is that he takes these very easy leaps, where it's, you know, like, what's the opposite of Interpol? Well, if Interpol is the international police, then the opposite's the international gang, right? It's the inner gang. What's a mother box? It's a motherboard with six sides. You know, it's a computer six times more powerful than what we have on Earth. Darkseid is the ultimate example of that, because Darkseid is not evil in the way that other characters are evil. He's evil in the way that he is within us. Like, he's literally the dark side of us. He's the nihilism. He's the hopelessness. He's the justification. Like, you know, Darkseid justifies my hate. It's all right there. And so to take that and extrapolate it into cosmic adventure is one thing. To take that and then do it as a very personal feeling story about what the dark side within us is, and about how the dark side within us is that nihilism and is that hopelessness, those panels of Darkseid is these blank panels, which, by the way, that's not a Kirby thing. That's a Morrison thing. And it's brilliant. Like, it's the great major addition to the fourth world post Kirby. Like, it's the one big thing, but it's perfect because the frequency of it and the way it interrupts everything, that's what the dark side of your mind is. Like, that's what anxiety is. That's what depression is. It's sitting on the couch and all of a sudden you have that panel and it's unavoidable. It's you're having a conversation. You're talking about something in your past and you remember something and then you feel it all over again. It's all there. That's the dark side that's in this book. And obviously Darkseid's also like a space rock monster who wants to kill us all. Yeah. It's a translation of what makes the fourth world brilliant into what honestly makes like Tom King and Mitch Gerard's brilliant in books like this.
Before we go on further about the story, I want to talk about the writing. Because the art is obviously part of the story. I actually want to talk about how well Gerard's tells the story just in the images. Because, first of all, I had to go back and look at the credits on this because I wanted to see who did the color art. And it was him. It was yeah. Mitch Gerard's. And the color art in this book is incredible because there are these parts where you feel like these colors are muddied and weird and a little off, but that's there for an effect. That's there.
Yeah, like the TV scenes where everything's off register.
That's there to put you in Scott Free's mindset. where everything's a little off for him. Characters show up and they look like themselves, but they're colored in such a way that they don't necessarily seem like people. Like, Barda always looks beautiful and great, like, and shining, right? Because that's still how he sees Barda. But Orion shows up, and it's almost like he's almost like in this kind of black and white. Because Orion is like an externalization of the stuff that happens when you're in that kind of mindset that he's in right there. Because he's making Scott get up and then punching in them and then making him get up again and then punching him again. Like, that's the kind of stuff people do to themselves. The way that the art makes all these things manifest, it complements the story so perfectly and so beautifully. It's an incredible issue of comic books. And yeah. And I wonder, because this is going to be a 12-issue series, I wonder if it can keep it up for the full 12 issues where the external so clearly matches up with the internal, or if it just becomes, you know, DC Comics superhero stuff where the internal stuff is explained by some external force, because Darkseid is a rock monster. I'm wondering how it's going to strike that balance and how it's going to walk that tightrope. And I'm extremely curious to see how it does.
I have a theory, and I don't want to throw it out there because I kind of feel like it might be a spoiler, even if it's wrong. Like, it's one of those weird ones. But I have a theory about what's really going on in Mr. Miracle.
Maybe we can talk about that theory in some bonus content.
It's one of King's strongest first issues, which I think is really saying something. He, as a writer, has had a string of incredible strong first issues with some incredible artists. Barnaby Bagenda on Omega Men, and even his Batman stuff with David Finch was like some of the best David Finch stuff I think we talked about. It's some of the best David Finch stuff we've ever seen. And now this, and Mitch Jarrett's kind of coming in as a real superstar in this book,
yeah,
is
no kidding,
phenomenally impressive.
I'm sure we could go on and on about Mr. Miracle for a long, long time, but let's move on and talk about clue number three. This is the third issue of the new Clue series from IDW. I've really, really been enjoying this book. I guess we can call him friend of the show. He's been on the show before. Paul Aller is writing this series, and the art is by an artist named Nelson Daniel. The editor is Carlos Guzman, and I know that because he is a character. Because there is a character who is the butler of the house where our well-known Clue characters are. His name is Upton, and he is an omniscient narrator. He describes himself as an omniscient narrator, and sometimes he talks to the editor of the comic book. It's kind of great. Like, nothing in this book is taken too seriously, but it's not just totally silly either. So you get a nice balance of, serious mystery and kind of silly fourth wall breaking at the same time. It, in some ways, it reminds me of the Clue movie in that way, where it kind of has that similar tone. But what I really like about issue three is that by the end of that issue, and I won't give away what the twist is, but by the end of the issue, you have no idea where the fuck this book's going anymore. Because something that seemed very clearly to have happened, or that you thought was one way, was in fact an entirely different way. It's still Clue, but it's not what you necessarily would expect it to be, Clue. It's from a Clue thing at this point, and it just kind of turns everything upside down. And that's super cool. I really like that. And the way that the book kind of reimagines the characters is neat. Like, Mr. Green is has a real world analog, let's say. Mr. Green is a pharma bro who raised the price of a drug. Figure that out. Miss Scarlet also has a real world analog. She's basically Iggy Azalea, because she's an Australian rapper lady. Not everybody is like that. Like, I don't know that there's a real world analog for Colonel Mustard. Professor Plum has a little bit of Neil deGrasse Tyson in him, I guess. But, like, all the characters are really interesting. Like, the mystery is an important part of the book, but it's not the only thing about the book. Like, there's some character relationships being developed, particularly by the third issue. Dr. Orchid and Professor Plum have some interesting stuff going on. The interaction with the editor actually happens in the first issue, but there's even more of it in the third issue, where the butler interrupts a flashback because he doesn't think that that's what should be happening in this comic book. And he gets into an argument with the editor. It's fun stuff. And I'm really, really liking Clue so far. So if that sounds like your thing, you should check it out.
I read that first issue, and it doesn't feel like the movie, which I think is – I don't know if we've ever talked about it, Matt, but I'm going to guess it's one of your favorites. It's certainly one of mine.
It's very fun, yeah.
Yeah, but it feels like it's doing the same thing with the comic that the movie does with the movie.
Yeah, it feels like it's within the spirit of the movie, at the very
least.
Yes. One last comic I'm going to talk about is the WWE SummerSlam 2017 special, which is very fun. I'm just going to read off the different stories. There's a story by Box Brown and Daniel Bayless about Dusty Rhodes versus Macho Man at SummerSlam. It was when Macho Man was the Macho King, so it probably would have been around 1990-ish. That one is a fun one, even though it kind of just abruptly ends. I was kind of hoping for a more of an ending on that one. Then there's one by Ryan Ferrier and Clay McCormick about Mankind and The Undertaker at SummerSlam in, I want to say, 1997.
Talk about the Boiler Room Brawl?
The Boiler Room Brawl, that's the one. Then there's one, a very fun one, about the natural disasters versus the Bushwhackers, written and illustrated by Derek Friedhoffs, which I mentioned to you, Chris, the Nasty Boys appear in.
You know, 93 was the year of the Nasties.
I believe that one's set in 1991. And then there's one last story about Seth Rollins and Finn Balor from last year's SummerSlam by Aaron Gillespie and Selena Espiritu. Which has some really, really great art in it, but surprisingly does not get into Finn Balor's shoulder injury. Just kind of digs into Seth Rollins as a character more than anything. And also has the best artistic depiction I've ever seen of Finn Balor's demon. It makes that tongue work, that tongue paint, in a really fun way. I thought this was and there's also one more part of the New Day Optimistic Odyssey backup that's been in the regular series. I think it's actually the last part of that backup. It's a fun special, fun anthology. As you can tell, there's a lot of variety in the storytelling. It's just that each story is about SummerSlam. It does the same thing that the regular series does of just adding some backstory to each you know, match that happened on TV, and adding some story to the story that you saw at the, you know, on Raw or in the pay-per-view. And the art throughout this thing is super good. So if you're in a SummerSlam mood and you want to read some good comics about some SummerSlams of the past, this would be a good choice. I thought it was
Matt. Would you say that comic is cool for the summer?
Yes, it is. In fact, cool for the summer, as the SummerSlam theme song from 2015. I think that's right. Would indicate. All right, Chris. Those are our comics reviews. Let's talk to Jeremy Whitley.
Let's do it. Joining us for this week's episode of War Rocket Ajax is someone we're very happy to have back on the show. You may know him as the guy I had lunch with today. but also from his many comics that he does, including The Unstoppable Wasp and Princeless, which just got a movie option, so we're going to find out about that, because I'm very curious to find out how that works. Jeremy Whitley is here. Jeremy, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. I don't have to do Steve Austin impressions this time, because it's not episode 316, so...
Oh, did you? Was that the last time you were on?
Yes, I figured out, like, when I was looking up your emails, I was like, oh, this last one says, like, maybe I can use this last link. Oh, it says episode 316 space glass break. I guess that's not the right link.
Yeah, this one, Jeremy, this one is episode 365, so we have to have you do your impression of Father Time.
Jeremy, I would say I'm sorry that we made you do a Steve Austin impression, but I'm not, like, at all. I feel no guilt or shame about that.
I think I pretty readily walked into that one. You were like, all right, 316, and I was like, let's just do some Steve Austin impressions. This will be great.
We are not here to do that this time. We're here to have a very serious discussion about your career as a comics writer and the stuff that you've been up to lately. But here's the thing. I just found out that you worked at Blockbuster Video, which is something that is fascinating to me. Surely you have to have at least one good Blockbuster story, right?
Yeah, I mean, oddly, Blockbuster is sort of responsible for me getting back into comics, because I used to work at the Blockbuster that was around the corner from the Ultimate Comics in Chapel Hill, when such a thing existed. One of the guys that worked at Ultimate Comics used to just basically spend the whole day watching movies, so he would, you know, stop by Blockbuster like 3 times a day, and, you know, eventually I ended up back over there. I have several varying between interesting and horrifying Blockbuster stories. I've had video games thrown at me by guys who were upset that that they got a lot of late fees on them.
Okay, question. I need a detail. Video games for what video game system? Because the pain threshold one would experience could vary greatly.
I believe it was an Xbox 360. So.
Oh, yeah. That's... Quit whining, Jeremy. That's nothing.
Well, I think maybe my... Maybe the weirdest experience I ever had at Blockbuster was when I was working at the Blockbuster in Hendersonville, which I know Matt lives in Asheville, so he's probably familiar with the hell that is Hendersonville. The Blockbuster there was definitely, like, formerly a steakhouse at some point. It was, like, right off the main... Oh, the one road in Hendersonville.
If for people who have no awareness of Hendersonville, North Carolina, I think the best way to describe it for our listeners would be every building there was probably a steakhouse at one time.
So, yeah, I feel like Hendersonville is the inevitable opposite reaction of having an Asheville. Like... If you, like, build up a cultural center where it's, like, super accepting and everybody, like, does art, like, this is the opposite of that. Like, nobody does art, and everything used to be a steakhouse, and we had a Denny's next door where people frequently had gunfights. Like, it's just a regular thing for, like, the cops to come out to Denny's, and we just, like, lock our front doors and go sit in the back for a while. But also at that store, at one point I was helping a gentleman find a movie when a full-sized pickup truck car tire came rolling through the middle of my store. a guy had pulled into our parking lot, which was like a steep like drop down, and I guess his lug nuts must have been loose, because the car tire with wheel inside of it came flying apparently down the parking lot, bounced off of our curb, and came flying through the front window of our Blockbuster, and then, like, across the length of the Blockbuster. Like, I walked outside, and there's just, like, a really confused guy standing there looking at his three-wheeled pickup truck. Just looked like he's trying to figure out what's going on. And, yes... came through this giant window that's obviously broken now. I don't know how you did that.
It literally had its block busted.
Yes.
Where did he rent?
He did not rent anything after that. It was on Easter Sunday that this happened, because Blockbusters were always open on Easter Sunday. And so my district manager just put a piece of wood in front of the window and left it there for until the next morning, because nobody would come out to fix the window.
That is delightful. So what was the hot rental? What was the hot VHS in Hendersonville? No, when was your tenure? Were you like, I think you're a little bit older than I am. So were you like VHS era? Were you like the tail end of VHS, or were DVDs in the mix at the time?
It was almost all DVDs. There were a couple of VHSs, which we were slowly working out as it got out. I think I got out of Blockbuster like 2 or 3 years before it just entirely collapsed. I like to think maybe I was responsible for keeping it afloat for as long as it was. But it was almost all DVDs. Trying to think, in Hendersonville, what was really popular? This would have been... I graduated college in 2006, so this would have been about 2007, 2008.
It's okay. I want to stop you right there. It's so weird to think about Blockbusters existing as recently as 2008. They seem like something from the long, long ago.
Yeah. I occasionally resent Blockbusters not being around anymore, because I just walk up to the red box and I'm like, what the hell do I want? I don't know what any of these things are. I just wish there's no martial arts section at the Red Box. Well, I don't know. I guess I'm going to go try Netflix again.
I'll tell you what you need to be trying, Jeremy, and that is the public library, because we've got a good one. And it's all I've been talking about over the past few weeks on War Rocket Ajax.
I'm doing a little research. And if the year was around 2007... 2007 was a very good year for movies. Some good stuff came out that year. But in addition to all of that, the first Transformers movies came out. I'm going to say that one was a raging success in Hendersonville.
Yeah, Transformers was a big success. Also a big success, Transmorphers. which is a real thing. There's also a Transmorphers 2.
I've seen it. I've seen Transmorphers. Don't you worry.
Classic Asylum Productions.
Yes, it's largely a result of your mom won't realize this isn't Transformers Productions. So it's basically like the kind of things that your grandma would get for you from the dollar store. Like, it looks like the right thing until you actually look at it, and it's like, oh, this one turns into a hatchback. That doesn't seem right.
It's practical. It's practicon.
Yeah, this one is a Nissan. That's weird.
Excuse me, I need to go pitch my story about Practicon, the Transformer who turns into a sensible hatchback.
So I think that has a future.
Now, your tenure at Blockbuster, was that, were you someone who was into movies? Was there a time when you were like, oh, yeah, it's not comics for me, it's going to be movies?
I don't know how seriously I ever was, into screenwriting. I definitely did, in college, I did some, playwriting and screenwriting stuff, along with just general creative writing stuff. And I was, really into movies. I still have a pretty, considerable collection of movies. But yeah, I've always loved movies, and I'm usually that guy that does the "You haven't seen such and such? Oh my god! How can you not have seen such and such?" to my wife.
Which I can tell you, every spouse loves.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, this weekend it was Blazing Saddles, and I was like, how can you have lived to be 33 without seeing Blazing Saddles? It seems impossible.
Also, by the way, Jeremy, you said you graduated in 2006, so I was wrong. You are younger than me, which is more of a function of me just assuming that everyone's older than me, which I can no longer do. I am an old.
Yeah, I'm having the same problem recently. So,
was there a movie that you saw when you were working there? Because like I had the comic book store experience, right? Like where I would just be buying back issues constantly using my employee discount and just reading everything. Like that's why, you know, people have talked about the Every Story Ever list and how Matt and I seem to be able to just pull stuff out of our heads, not having seen the lists beforehand. Was that like something that you did with movies?
I was fairly obnoxious at the time. Like I worked my way through the entire, like, you know, AFI Top 100 and then, like, several of their other Top 100 lists, and then was working through, like, the IMDb Top 250 at the point that, like, I had a steady enough girlfriend that it began to get embarrassing. So I was like, all right, I'm just going to watch movies that I enjoy now. But, yeah, I had a pretty... when I worked at Blockbuster, I had a pretty obnoxious, like offhand knowledge of movies, and then like what we had on shelf, that, you know, I just go pull stuff for people, be like, you liked this? Oh, you'll definitely like this thing here. Buy this.
What was the go-to that you would hand sell people? Like what movie would you recommend to everybody who walked in the door?
That's a tough question. Cause no matter what I say, it's probably wrong.
I mean, there's no wrong answer. There's just answers that we're probably going to make fun of you for, which is all of them. So no pressure.
You know what it is? It's Leon, also known as The Professional, which is a movie that for some reason nobody has seen, but everybody who has seen loves because it's amazing.
From the director of Valerian? Luc Besson?
There was some point where I was listening to a review of Valerian, and I was like, what the fuck happened to this guy? Because, like, yeah, after the last movie of his I saw with Scarlett Johansson, I was like, I'm never going to go see a Luc Besson movie in theaters again. What was that movie?
Oh, that's the one where she could use all of her brain?
She could use all
Lucy?
Of her brain.
You guys have a Lucy?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lucy... I'm pretty sure I, like, audibly groaned in the theater at several points during Lucy. Like, I try to be, like, a not a horrible person in movie theaters, but there were several points where it's just like,
What? Was it when she can see Wi-Fi that you had a problem?
Yeah, I believe that was one of them. And I remember watching that movie and thinking, there's no good way to finish this movie. There's no good way to end this. And I was right. The ending of that movie is terrible. They build up to a whole, like, action scene at the end. Then, like, it just doesn't happen. Like, because she's now able to control time and space because she's using her whole brain. And also is connected to a monkey named Lucy from the past.
Okay, that part I did not know about this film.
Yeah. That is a movie that starts out bad and gets batshit crazy. Like, by the end of that movie, you're like, what is this even about?
That said, the Professional is a pretty solid choice. It is bananas to think about how the guy who directed The Professional also directed Lucy and Valerian, but the Professional is pretty solid.
He is pretty close to being like a Frank Miller of movies. Like, man, it's bad. It's too bad Luc Besson just stopped directing things.
Yeah, like he got to what. I don't know. I guess he wrote The Transporter, which is pretty all right.
I'm sorry. Did Luc Besson write The Transporter?
He sure did.
Yes.
That I did not know. I mean, it's one of those things that, in retrospect, I feel like I always knew, but yeah. I definitely did not actually know it.
So I want to use all of this to actually segue into your big Comic-Con news, Jeremy, because we've been talking about movies, and we've kind of related them back to comics a little bit. And
that's a power segue there, Matt. It's a good job.
I'm still working my way through it. Don't compliment me until I'm finished. So your big news is that Princeless is in production at Sony, or in development, I should say. Having established how strongly you have been and are a movie guy.
Having established that you think you're better than Luc Besson in every way. And that he is trash compared to your work.
But, like, honestly, like, what? How cool is that? Like, how, knowing that this is happening, how does that make you feel?
It's pretty damn cool, because, like, it's something that we've been working on for, like, a good long time, for a couple of years now. Like, you know, it was something that we'd always talked about, because, you know, I think a lot of people, there's this sort of, like, question of, like, oh, is it a comic, or is it a thing that's, like, made immediately to develop into movies, which, like, Princeless is not. Like, it's a comic, but, you know, all the questions about, like, diversity and representation that, like, you know, started Princeless are, you know, the same things apply to movies. So, like, you know, it was always a thing that I was excited about and open to. So, like, we started talking to our producers over at Anonymous Content a couple of years ago, and it was a really interesting thing, because we got hooked up with these guys, and they were really nice. They were saying a lot of, you know, nice things to us about, you know, what they thought of the movie and or what they thought of the book and, like, what they'd like to see in a movie. And, you know, it was immediately, like, a thing that clicked. We didn't know anything about them. We didn't know any of the movies they'd produced. Then, like, that same year, they had, like, the top two contenders for Best Picture. Like, they produced both Spotlight and The Revenant, like, right after we signed on with them. And then they won all of the awards. And I was like, all right, so we made a good choice. This is a good place to be. And, yeah, they've been tracking people down for us. And apparently, like, Sony approached them and has been super excited about, you know, putting something together with Princeless.
I always have this question when I hear about something like having a movie option or a TV option. How involved are you, and how involved do you want to be?
You know, it's an interesting thing, because, like, I want to be involved enough that I make sure, like, the stuff about that book that's, you know, clearly important to me from anybody who's talked to me about it, like, makes it into the movie. But also I know that, like, the size this story is, like, it wouldn't translate directly, you know, onto film. So it's going to need to move around, and things are going to need to be changed. And I'm okay with that. But, like, I don't think, like, those sorts of changes are best made by me. You know, Sony has, you know, talked with us a lot about who we want writing it. And they got, you know, a great screenwriter who I really like and I really think is going to do a great job. And I think as far as me being involved, like, making sure that there's, you know, somebody driving the ship that I like and gets what we're doing is important. But then, like, beyond that, you know, we get to do, like, a style guide, which is, like, this stuff needs to stay this way. Like, this, you know, this character has to be like this. They have to look like this. You know, this stuff is important. And, you know, that's getting to do that and, you know, getting my voice heard that way and having it be, you know, part of our contract with them that there is this style guide that they need to follow is super important. But, you know, at that point, I think, like, I'd like to, you know, be involved and keep talking with people, but I don't feel any need to, like, steer that ship, because there are people that know what they're doing a lot better than I do.
I saw you mention, like, you talked about the difficulty of that, like, trying to boil, like, these characters down to these specific things that you can give to someone and say, this is what's important. And I can't imagine how challenging that is, because they're characters that you've lived with for, I mean, as long as I've known you, like, when did Princeless first start? Like 2010?
This November it'll be 6 years since first issue came out.
And that's like to have those characters in your head and have that world in your head because you've expanded it. Like obviously Raven is a standalone set of comics now as well. There's a lot in there that's got to be difficult to translate from knowing in your head what these characters would do to trying to explain that to another person.
That's one of the more difficult things I feel like I've ever done with comics, because like when I'm scripting, I can kind of flow and I'm like, all right, this happens, and then sometimes I'll surprise myself and be like, oh no, this is what would happen. With this, I can't do that. Like, I have to have all this stuff down. I have to boil it down as much as possible because I don't want to turn over to them like a 40-page document in addition to all of, the comics that they have and be like, this is the stuff that absolutely has to go into the movie. Because that's obnoxious. Like, I don't want to be that guy. But at the same time, like, there's this overwhelming dread of, like, what if I don't say that this thing is important and it's really the most important thing and I just didn't think to include it and then it ruins the whole movie? Nobody ever likes any of this stuff again.
I mean, that's a very real possibility, Jeremy.
Oh yeah, they could destroy all of it. My whole life's work is gone.
Everything you've worked for just gone in an instant. So it's gotta be fun, right? It's gotta be fun.
Oh yeah.
to have that new anxiety.
Yeah, it's easy.
The other question I have is, will you make a cameo? And if so, who do you want to play?
I don't know. If they want me to make a cameo, I will gladly make a cameo. Although I'm sure I'd like it to stick to something like, a fruit vendor, a guy who's apple cart, or say like cabbage cart gets destroyed in the process of one of the, and as part of the story. I just want to be that, that guy whose life is ruined by a brief second of the thing, and then you don't have to watch me act anymore after that.
Even your cameo character has anxiety about this movie, Jeremy. I think that's very telling.
Well, I think it's interesting, like, that we, at least Chris and I, like, maybe sort of initially made the assumption that this was going to be a live-action movie, because I haven't seen anything that necessarily makes the distinction between it being live-action or animated, and I think Princeless could certainly be... could work as an animated movie too. Do you have a preference one way or another about that, Jeremy? And have you talked about whether it would be live action or animated?
When we started looking, Emily and I were looking at something animated just because we thought that was more realistic. We were thinking more in the terms of a TV show at that point, just because movies are expensive. We didn't think that was like a real possibility, but when Sony came to us with this, they wanted to do a movie and they wanted to do it as live action. And I think if they can do it, it's going to be hella cool. Like, I like the idea of actually having this type of cast of characters, which doesn't really exist in any movies that would have to be of the size that this is on screen would be amazing. I'm excited to see how they do it because they seem to be pretty excited about it.
I am really looking forward to it. I've been on that Princeless train for quite some time, as you know. I got that quote on volume one still,
yeah.
Still rocking and rolling with that. But I also wanted to talk to you a little bit about Unstoppable Wasp, which just recently ended at number 8. The experience of writing that book, I'm really curious about, because you approach it in a way that I don't know that I've seen another superhero title build. Like in that you have, it's obviously a mainstream like Marvel superhero comic. It's the Wasp. It's as Marvel Comics as it gets. But you know, at the end of that first issue, you have, like, the real-life STEM stuff going on in the letters page. And I really, I'm curious about how that came about, like, how you decided that this was the book to do that, that, like, if like, what the process was like going, like, no, hey, this is what I think we should do in lieu of a letters page.
Yeah, I think that that stemmed to some extent from us talking about, like, what we wanted to do with the book, that we wanted to, you know, bring in more female geniuses, because that's something that, you know, Marvel has, you know, for a long time sort of been lacking. There are these, you know, characters who have always been the smartest characters in Marvel Comics, and because of when Marvel Comics started, they're all, you know, white dudes of a certain age. You know, and Moon Girl, to their credit, sort of broke that ceiling before we did. That was what was really interesting to me about the character when I was, you know, talking to Mark Waid about her, because she'd only really appeared in Avengers to that point before we started writing this. And I wanted to focus on that and bring in this idea of her sharing that, of her, like, creating this space where she would bring, you know, more characters into this. And, you know, with the hopes of getting real young girls and young women into this story, and hopefully into science. But at the same time, there's this, you know, there's a big gap between comic book science and, like, real science. And, you know, I wanted to have sort of a bridge there to be able to go from, like, okay, you know, this is stuff in comic books where, you know, people are, you know, doing these sorts of things. And then here are women who are really doing it. Like, here's, you know, the actual superheroes out there, you know, making these sorts of discoveries and changing the world. And that was largely, like, a combination of me and Elsa Charretier, who's the artist on, you know, the first six issues and most of the book, you know, talking about what we wanted to do, because she was talking about doing, you know, a Tumblr where we talked about, you know, women in science and sort of cross-promoting that with the book. And I said, you know, I really wanted that kind of stuff to be in the book. And yeah, I'd seen, I think, oddly enough, it's inspired in a way by, like, reading things like Sex Criminals and being like, oh, you can do really weird stuff with a letters page and, like, just, you know, use it to do things other than just, like...
Right. I'm sorry. I'm just thinking about the stuff that's in the Sex Criminals letters pages is pretty far from what you do.
Yeah, but
I can absolutely see the connection.
Yeah. And, like, you know, just seeing everything from that to, you know, the supplemental material that's in things like Bitch Planet and Criminal and stuff like that, being like, you know, we can do that in the back page of this book, replace, you know, what would normally be kind of, you know, boring boilerplate letter column with, you know, something hopefully fun and inspirational. And at the very least, it gave me the chance to talk to a lot of, like, super intelligent people who, you know, are doing things with their lives that, like, I don't fully understand, like, what their job titles mean. One of the people we interviewed was a plasma scientist. And I was like, I don't really know what that means. Like, what is it that you do?
Did you ever have a moment where you, like, someone was like, oh, I'm, like, a microbiologist? Or someone was like, oh, I'm a physicist. And you're like, oh, yeah, like the atom. And then you immediately feel that shame of only knowing things from comics, because that's an emotion I've felt a lot in my life.
Yeah. But, you know, some of the first interviews we did are some, like, archaeology kind of stuff. And, like, my reference point for archaeology is, you know, Indiana Jones and DC Comics, like, you know, Hawkman and stuff. So, like, okay, but, like, obviously you haven't done, you know, this kind of stuff, but, like, well, what do you really do? I think an overwhelming, like, thing with a lot of the scientists was like, oh yeah, science is not as interesting as people think it is. Like, it's not. Science is really boring because you have to spend a lot of time, like, documenting things and redoing the same procedures over and over to make sure that you get the same results every time. It's not nearly as interesting as comic books make it.
Well, that leads directly to the question, how do you make that sound appealing? Like, how do you make real-world science sound as appealing as a character who can shrink and fly around and has assassin skills?
I mean, to some extent you can't. Like, it's difficult to, like, make that sound all, like, as exciting. But, like, you know, I think we did it by, in a large part, like, talking about macro kind of stuff with people, like, what is it that you do? Like, what, you know, what have you discovered? Like, what, you know, amazing things have you done throughout your career as compared to, like, what's it like every day? Because, like, the answer to that with scientists is almost, like, it's almost the same as it is with every job, even comic book writing. It's like, well, I go and sit down, and I write a lot of things, and I go over and over and over things, and you know, most of the time I just repeat the same process. It's not nearly as interesting as you think it is.
My life as a comic book writer is incredibly glamorous and exciting in every way, and handsome and strong.
Your experience is handsome and strong?
My experience is handsome and strong. Yes, I said exactly what I meant, Jeremy.
All right.
Like, what was the response like? Like, I mean, I feel like you have, when I see you at conventions, you have, like, the best in ever, because you have Princeless, and it's such an easy high concept to get across, like, especially if, you know, it has very, like, fun-looking, like, accessible, like, cartoony art, and so, like, if a parent walks by with a kid, you're like, hey, do you like stories about princesses? Do you like dragons and stuff? Well, this is about a princess who decides that she doesn't want to sit in a castle and teams up with her dragon and drives around. And this is her friend who's a pirate who goes and has adventures. And with Wasp, you had like this, oh, like she's a lady scientist who also fights crime, and you may have seen someone like her in a major motion picture. Like, how do you, what's the response been when you've talked to people about this book?
It's been great. Like, I really feel fortunate in that, like, I think it was difficult early on to pitch it to, especially, like, when we're trying to do, you know, interviews and things like that to people, like, to pitch it to scientists because they're so used to, like, comic books sort of being haphazard at best with science. And, you know, we were like, no, we really want to, like, push this angle of real science and girls in STEM and stuff like that. There was a lot of people like early on that were very, oh, okay, sure. But then like once it started coming out and people started, you know, seeing the story and the interviews and everything, like it's been an overwhelmingly positive response. You know, I couldn't overstate the amount of support we've gotten from, you know, people in science, everybody from librarians and teachers to real world scientists. I mean, you were at the Free Comic Book Day this year with me where we had a actual scientist and TV personality, Tamara Robinson, who was on, you know, Mythbusters, like out there doing cool, like science related or, you know, comic book related science, like with kids. It was, you know, she's been like super awesome and supportive and like, you know, just takes the like experience to a whole different level.
That is good to hear, Jeremy, and I'm really happy that that you got to put that out there, even though it is currently done for now. It's something that everybody, I think, should check out. It's a really solid book. But now I think it's time for us to stop asking questions and instead turn things over to our listeners for some Twitter questions. And Matt, if our listeners want to get in on these conversations that we have each and every week here on War Rocket Ajax, how exactly can they go about that?
The year is 2008, or possibly 2007. You are a customer, or possibly an employee, at the Blockbuster in Hendersonville, North Carolina. Freeze frame! A wheel and tire have crashed through the window. This is your moment to act. What will you do? How will you react? How will you respond? You should go to a brand new website called Twitter.com is what you should do. It was only founded like a year ago. and you should sign up for an account. And then wait until it's 10 years later, and it's Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern time.
Ajax started in 2009. They only have to wait a year.
Well, I'm talking about this particular episode.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. This particular episode that was recorded 3 days ago.
They're going to get a great username, though. Just saying. If they go sign up in 2007 or 2008,
you're going to get...
They can have whatever they want.
Any name.
Well, don't get the Matt D. Wilson, and don't get the ISB.
They could probably be just Matt Wilson.
Jeez.
Oh, man.
Boy, oh, boy. Anyway, whatever you sign up as, wait until Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. That's 6:30 Pacific. And Chris or myself, or in this case, the guest, will put out the call for questions. And you can ask a question just like the questions you're about to hear for Jeremy Whitley right now. And I'm going to start with actually not a question, but a comment from Eric R. Jenkins on Twitter. That's Eric underscore R underscore Jenkins, who says, no question, but thank you for all the comics I'll be giving my nieces for the next couple of decades.
Aww.
Which is
you're welcome, Eric.
So nice. And something Jeremy gets to hear that, that you know, not everybody gets to hear. Next up, we have this question from Xavier Files on Twitter, who asks, how do you find the right balance between Marvel Comics fake science and real-world science in a book like Unstoppable Wasp?
It's tough. Like, I think the easiest, or, well, the key and maybe the hardest part of it is trying to find, like, a way to make the fake science, like, relate to real science in a way that makes sense. Because, like, I think we had to... You know, there's a point where sort of a key plot point is, like, recreating, like, Vision's phasing ability. And I had to ask a lot of people who know more about comics than me, like Mark Waid, about, like, hey, has anybody actually explained how this works? Is this something that we can steal that somebody else has done, or do I have to find an explanation for this and how they recreate it? So, like, we had to, like, and the answer was no, nobody had explained it, so we had to figure out, like, okay, you know, they're rigging up this thing, how do we make it sound like real science, and, you know, have just sort of this one extra step to be like, oh, no, and then, you know, magic, and this thing happens.
Tales to Enrage on Twitter, Greg Black, is potentially opening a can of worms by asking, how often do people ask you when or if you're going to start Princessless?
You know, surprisingly, not all that often. Not nearly as often as I've gotten almost the same thing with Wasp and, like, you know, the group there is called GIRL, it's G-I-R-L, like, S.H.I.E.L.D. and all these other stupid acronyms. People are like, you can't have boys doing science and your comic is so sexist. And it's like, that's literally the point of it, is that, like, that's the only people who've been doing science for the past 75 years of comics, and we wanted to change that. Also, like, people making fun of, like, it stands for Genius in Action Research Lab. People are like, oh, that's such a stupid acronym. I was like, this entire universe hinges on a, like, world organization called S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, there was S.H.I.E.L.D., there's S.W.O.R.D., there was HAMMER, which literally didn't stand for anything. Like, you got a lot of things to go through before you can fuss at me about this.
I guess one of the benefits of Princeless is that it's its own thing. And so people can't reference some made-up history as a reason for keeping things the same.
Yeah, generally, if people only want to give me crap about Princeless are not, like, bound by facts or anything like that. They just like to, you know, go online and scream at people. And I don't generally feel the need to answer those people.
If only there was some organization in comics that was made up of boys and had boy in the name. Like, if there was, like, even one or five, if only. But sadly, that is not the world in which we live because of people like Jeremy Whitley.
So sad.
All right, get ready for a couple questions from some fictional characters, Jeremy.
Starting, it's Character Corner.
It's Character Corner. This one is from Stone Cold HCC, an account, which exists. Only to ask questions on War Rocket Ajax. And Stone Cold wants to know, what's y'all's favorite episode of Family Feud?
Can you have a favorite episode of Family Feud?
I mean, there is a definite best episode of Family Feud.
Okay. Is it the wrestler one?
It's the one Sting was on, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I should have seen that one coming. My favorite is the one where one of the answers is my dong / cooter.
Oh, no.
I'm just going to have to generally say anything with the Richard Karn era, you know, pre-Steve Harvey, not Louis. You know, just a good Al Borland in there.
Was the my dong / cooter one a Steve Harvey episode? It had to be.
It was the Steve Harvey era, yes.
Because that would only be up there so Steve Harvey could react to it with shock.
Yeah, they play up the reactions, and it's like he's done 100 episodes of that show. Like, you've got to stop being surprised at some point.
JJJ Bugle News, that's J. Jonah Jameson, asks, could Nadia Pym cure the lycanthropy that ails my dear son, the American hero? He is a man of science, the first man to play football on the moon.
It's an important question. It really defines our times. I feel like, yeah, I'm gonna say, of course. Of course, it might cause something even worse because that's how science works in the Marvel Universe. Is you would cure lycanthropy. I can't say that word. And you know, end up with something even worse.
It's a risk we all take, especially when it's moon lycanthropy. It's you know, that special kind of werewolfism that John Jameson has.
Yeah, it's much worse than like cloud lycanthropy.
Our last question is going to come from Lucas Brown, who wants to know, which of the five deadly venoms would you choose as your personal kung fu style?
Now you've got here's your choices. You have toad, you have centipede, you have snake.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have two others that I can't remember right now.
Scorpion and lizard are the other two.
Scorpion and lizard. Thank you, Matt.
It's not centipede because that's gross. The lizard is the one who can run up walls. So
yeah, lizard is the one that can run up walls.
I think if I don't say the lizard who has incredible speed and can run up walls as my writing style, I think Chris would call bullshit because. That's how I write. Is I write incredibly fast while running up walls.
Matt, which of the deadly venoms would you choose?
I mean, I was going to choose lizard also because what's cooler than being able to run up walls?
Right.
I'll tell you, that is Scorpion. His style uses deadly kicks.
All righty, Jeremy Whitley has been our guest, and it has been wonderful talking with him. Jeremy, before we wrap up, please tell all our listeners where they can find you online.
You can find me on Twitter at jrome58, so it's jrome58, and then Tumblr at princelesscomic.tumblr.com, and then be able to find very shortly more Princeless, Pirate Princess, Vampirella, and the Comixology exclusive Hulk and Thor story I'm doing online.
Old Stay Busy Whitley is getting it all done. Our guest has been Jeremy Whitley. Delight to have on the show whenever we can. Jeremy, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
Thanks once again to Jeremy Whitley for joining us on the show. But now, Matt, we're done with the interview questions. It's time for us to take some questions from our listeners.
That is right. It's time for a listener question. And this one we got via email from Adam Spencer, who says, "Hi, gents. I've really enjoyed all of your wrestling talk over the last couple years. I haven't watched wrestling since I was a teenager. If I wanted to get back into it, what do you recommend?"
Unfortunately, I feel like main roster WWE, despite having legitimately some of the best wrestlers in the world, is kind of as bad as it has ever been right now. They have lost me, Matt. It's rough stuff.
It's up and down, I would say. I would say there was definitely a darker time than this, like 8 or 9 years ago, when when I knew it was bad. It's not where I would say to start, for sure. I would say to start, particularly if you are someone who is into comic books, and if you want something that's kind of manageable, where you can watch a season of it, and that's it, and it's an hour show each time, is to go on Netflix, find season one of Lucha Underground, and watch that. Because not only are you going to kind of figure out really quickly if you like the kind of modern in-ring action of, I guess that first season was 2014 or 2015. You're going to kind of figure out how you feel about that pretty quick. You're also going to get some pulpier, more comic booky stories than you typically are going to get on WWE. I think it's a good bridge from comic book superheroes into pro wrestling. And if you like it, you might like some other wrestling stuff too. If you don't like it, wrestling might just not be for you. So
yeah,
I would say start with Lucha Underground.
I think that's fair, especially because that first season of Lucha Underground starts as such a traditional wrestling show and ends as something completely different.
Yeah. But even from the get-go, it's got more heightened characters.
It's got personality.
It's got a guy whose name is 1,000 Deaths, right?
Yes.
Who is, from the very start, the human embodiment of death.
Yes.
So there's like I said, there's some heightened characters that are more in line with what you might enjoy from comic books. And you don't have to commit, you know, 5 hours minimum a week to WWE, which is a time sink, let me tell you.
Along those same lines, like, as frustrating as the main roster might be, I still think NXT is a perfect, like, perfect unit of wrestling to watch every week. Again, it's an hour long, great action, some great people, very clear good guy, bad guy dynamics. And it's the developmental territory, but honestly, what you're seeing on TV are the people who have been in developmental for a while, or who have at least been pro wrestlers for a while. So you're getting a solid show with some really good wrestling. And again, you know, I saw him live a couple weeks ago when we were in Minneapolis, and it was a banger. It was a real good show.
Is there somewhere where you would suggest somebody start with NXT, or would you say just to dive in with the latest?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like the experience of watching wrestling is you just start, right? Like, I think wrestling probably has its all-star Supermans, you know? Like, I'm trying to think of, like, what comic would you give someone as their first comic? But I think the more authentic experience, and kind of the more, like, what you're going to get more often than not if you start watching pro wrestling is just whatever's, you know, it's what's on TV. It's the wrestling you get that week, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. The benefit of Lucha Underground and the benefit of it being on Netflix is that you can start from the beginning.
Yes, that is true.
That is the beginning of the story and the beginning of those characters, even though they play a little bit on those characters having, or those performers having come from other places at times.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, it is a discrete unit of pro wrestling. NXT is available on Hulu, so if you have Hulu, you can watch it. I would suggest going back to, I don't know, a few weeks before and watching, I don't know, 3 or 4 episodes of NXT up to the most recent one to see if you like that story progression.
Yeah.
You can kind of get a little bit of both sides if you watch some Lucha Underground and some NXT, but yeah, those both have the benefits of being 1 hour each.
What is dope as hell that you should watch if you find yourself in possession of a network subscription. If you do the free trial on the network, January 29th, 2004. There's an episode of SmackDown. Chris, you want me to watch an episode of SmackDown from 2004? Yes, I do. I know how it sounds. But there is a 15-man Royal Rumble that happens after the regular Royal Rumble that year that was booked by Paul Heyman and is about an hour long and is legitimately incredible. It is one of the best professional wrestling matches I think I have ever seen.
I don't think I've ever seen that, so I should probably go watch that.
I mean, that's something we could do like a commentary track on for bonus content, because it's super good.
While we're recommending specific episodes of things to go watch, I would say if you want to find one episode of NXT to go watch, the one I would suggest is the one that's the last episode from June of this year. It should definitely be up on Hulu. I want to say it's from June 28th. And it's the episode that has the last woman standing match between Asuka and Nikki Cross, which is, it's so good. It's a great, great match between two women who just beat the hell out of each other.
Yeah. Asuka's so good.
They tell a great story in the ring, and it ends in very almost untoppable fashion. I almost hesitate to tell you that as a place to start, because it goes so wild by the end of the match. But that's a really, really good match. So hopefully, Adam, that gives you some places to start, and you can let us know how it went. All right, Chris, that's going to do it for our question segment, which means we're going to wrap up this here episode of War Rocket Ajax by letting folks know that they can send us questions if they want to at our email, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That's also where you can send every story ever lists, panel president lists, or if you just want to like let us know what's up or want to sponsor the show or anything, you can email us. You can also send questions to our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. You can check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com, where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. And be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts and leave us a review there if you like the show. The more positive reviews we get on Apple Podcasts, the more we are featured there, which is good for us. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us online. For me, all you have to do is go to mattdwilson.net to find links to all my stuff. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
People can find links to everything that I write at the-isb.com. That is my website, and it has links to the columns that I write, including the new That's What's Up column that I do weekly at Looper, as well as links to comics that I've written that you can buy. And if you look for it, there's a link to my Amazon wishlist in there. My birthday was Saturday. Let the spirit move you as it will. The-isb.com, at the ISB on Twitter if you want to get in touch that way, and check out some of the other stuff that I do as well. Matt, that does it for this show, but before we get out of here, we did want to give a nod to our cause of the week.
That's right. This one's going to be slightly different. It's a cause that we've talked about before, but I wanted to note that over the weekend, last weekend, not last weekend that this episode goes up, but the weekend before that, Bandcamp was donating their portion of the profits from sales to some charities, and I decided that I wanted to get in on that as well. So I decided to donate everything that we sold that weekend to Trans Lifeline, which is an organization that we've talked about on this show before. And we got a pretty decent amount of money to donate, so I made that donation. If you missed out on that, and you just want to donate some money to Trans Lifeline, then go ahead and do that. I would encourage it very much. The charity that Bandcamp was donating to is the Transgender Law Center, which is an organization that, like some of the other organizations we've talked about on the show recently, they're trying to actively change laws to make them more equitable towards transgender people and the trans community. So both good organizations. If you missed out on that Bandcamp stuff, the Transgender Law Center or Trans Lifeline are both places that would be very good places to send a little bit of money. So if that sounds like something you can do, you get a little money burning through your pocket, consider donating to those organizations.
Yeah, so that's going to do it for War Rocket Ajax number 365. That's right, everybody. There are now enough episodes of this show to listen to one every day of the year. Please don't do that. It would be terrible.
But if you did, then you could have HQC in your life every day.
You talking about 24/7 HQC?
365 HQC!
Have a great week, everybody.
We love you.
Yeah!